You're listening to highlights from OTB AM, Off the Ball's new daily breakfast show. It's live every weekday morning from 7:45. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube or Twitter, or listen live at offtheball.com.
Kevin Gaban, come on in.
Good morning, lads. How you doing?
You've taken the Mayo jersey off as the positive point number one. I think you were in the kitchen the last time you were with us.
Yeah, well, Tommy.
What part of the mansion have you moved on to?
Hardly a mansion, Adrian, but Tommy has moved me. Tommy said the lighting was crap there in the kitchen
today,
so I had to move into the lounge, into the living room there.
Not sure how much of that conversation between us having on there. You picked up Paul Rowan's writing in the Times this morning about a potential role for Liam Brady from a scouting point of view. So, I mean, it's kind of, Paul Rowan is, I feel that it's a little bit unclear in terms of where he feels that position might be, whether it's identifying Irish players that we know of who are playing at English clubs, or actually whether it's identifying players through the granny rule. When you came through, you obviously came through the underage grades, and it was a stated aim of yours that you were going to play for the Republic of Ireland. But what sort of interaction would you have had at scouts at that level? Was it you pushing forward to come in, or was there somebody reaching out to you?
No, it actually was. Well, I mean, you probably know the story. I was called up for England at youth level. So Sam Allardyce then had spoken to me, who was my youth team manager, about a few things anyway, about going to play for England and things like this. And then obviously that never materialised, because I didn't want to let it materialise. And I spoke to Sam Allardyce then. Sam had said to me, look, Mick McCarthy's getting the job. Sam had subsequently left Preston. He'd gone on to manage Blackpool. And he gave me a call and he said, look, I've had a chat with Mick McCarthy. I've let him know that you want to go and play for him. It was Mick's first game then with the senior side against Russia. And I was then called up for the under-21s then for the Russia game up at Drogheda. That's how it came about for me. There's one or two people along the way have told me that I wouldn't have played for Ireland if people didn't pick up the phone. But basically, that was how it came about. There wasn't so much a scouting system in place then to go and identify the young talent. Yeah. The FEI do have that in place now. I know Brian Kerr, Brian says it himself. Brian said he used to go over on a Saturday morning, and wherever he was going to, say he was going to Tottenham or he was going to Aston Villa, wherever it would be, he'd always try and take in a youth team game around that area in the morning. He said invariably go and watch an under-18 game. He'd get a team sheet and he'd literally spot a name, whether it be, I don't know, whether the name was Murphy, whether it was Delaney, whatever it would be, and he'd see the name, and then hopefully he might be able to then think they've got Irish heritage. Basically, that was how it was, maybe going back 15 years. Then there was something put in place where we did manage to get some sort of scouting network in place to try and identify these names, where players then would start to declare or start to make their availability be known further, a lot earlier than that.
Yeah, we're going to give you a shout back there, Kev, because your screen is just frozen. We can hear you. Imperfect surround sound. We have your picture back, I think. It's because even that point about the surnames that you mentioned, I mean, in 2017, it's frequently Irish people aren't necessarily called Michael O'Reilly or Billy Maguire. Yeah. That there's another element to it that, you know, maybe we could apply a bit more science to it. And actually, it strikes me
It has changed now. It has changed now. There is a scouting network in place where they identify players a lot earlier. It's not necessarily that's how it was. I'm going back like 20 years here on this one. This is how it was. So it's a lot different during those times. I just think overall now we're at a stage where it's not about identifying talent across the water and try to get the granny rule in place. It's about developing our players over here, over in Ireland, and to see how we're going to basically get our players through the system that way. Because the greatest success of our team over the last 10 years has been players coming through from League of Ireland level, because we've not been able to seriously develop players from a younger age or get the lads that's coming through. I mean, Harry Arter to be one, he will be maybe coming through on the granny rule, maybe that's in that side at the moment. You probably throw off a few names to me, but a lot of those players that played on Tuesday night had played League of Ireland football.
Should we be bringing Liam Brady back into the FAI setup, Kev?
Well, that depends on what Liam wants himself. Liam was a big loss to Giovanni Trapattoni when he left the FAI at that stage. Now, I know that he had commitments with Arsenal at that time. He doesn't necessarily have those now. But Liam was a big loss to Trapattoni because Trapattoni lost, first of all, he lost that communication link that, that Liam brought to the side. Liam was excellent for Trapattoni of getting his message across because, of course, the language barrier was always going to be the problem. But I don't know. It's a difficult one, I think, when you're trying to just all of a sudden we're plucking out names, big personalities, and thinking they're going to be and they're going to take that role just because Liam had a role within Arsenal at youth level. Does that mean to say that he's going to go out and identify new talent? Liam has never had that role at any stage. So why all of a sudden now do we think he's going to go and become a coach? Become a scout or an identifier? That was never Liam's role at Arsenal. It was never Liam's role when he was with the senior side. So I think all of a sudden you're plucking out a name to go and develop players or try to identify players. He's never done that before.
Yeah, it's a thought provoking conversation deserving piece, but the premise of it is that he goes on the piss with Eamon Dunphy, and so actually. Yeah, he could have something to offer Irish football. Let's move on, Kev, because it's a good old big weekend of Premier League football, and I know you're out and about as well at a couple of games. The North London Derby, obviously, is the one that's of most interest, and I'm sure Irish fans will be having a bit of a cheeky view of Christian Eriksen this weekend as well. Wenger's been out in the press conference this week. He's been talking about how Arsenal are not underdogs for this game. The table certainly suggests that they are. Recent form suggests that Arsenal are very much the underdogs for this game.
Yeah, very much so. I don't think they've won in the last six against Spurs, have they? The only thing that Arsenal maybe look at, they're in very good form at home. But I'd have to say now Tottenham have moved on to a different level from Arsenal. Tottenham throughout the side 1-11 are better. I think they've got better creative players in the final third. I think they've got a better defensive unit. Toby Alderweireld being out, that could be a blow to Tottenham. That's the one where I look at maybe this weekend. Are they going to maybe lose someone that's going to provide that real stability defensively to them? But I don't know. I think Tottenham have moved on. I actually think I can't see Tottenham losing this game. Now, whether or not they're going to go on and win it, I don't know. But I think Spurs are in a great position to go there and beat Arsenal this weekend.
Let's actually just hear from Arsene Wenger on that point of Arsenal being underdogs. Here he is speaking at yesterday's press conference about the perceived gap between the two clubs at the moment.
Good morning, Arsene.
Good morning.
As you were just saying, it's been 21 years. After all that time, is this still the fixture you look forward to most?
It's one of the fixtures, yes, that of course is very important for us and that you want to win. But basically as well, because in the table we have to make some ground up, you know, with the top teams, and it's... At home, we have been very strong, and our home strength will certainly be vital to decide where we will finish at the end of the season.
For a long time, obviously, you were the dominant team in North London, perhaps in recent seasons.
For 20 years.
Exactly. And perhaps in the last year, Spurs have just edged their nose in front. Do you almost even see yourselves as underdogs this weekend?
No, not at all, no. You know, I think... Tottenham is a good side, but we have the quality to win this game, and that's what we want to show.
Kev, Jonathan Wilson was writing yesterday in The Guardian about kind of the two identities of the club now and how Spurs have essentially become the club that Arsenal wanted to become. You look at all the wasted youth talent that Arsenal have, and there's a lot of truth in that, isn't there?
Yeah, it is. I actually read the piece, and it definitely is that way, because what Arsenal set out, and I'm probably going back maybe even 15, 20 years ago within Arsenal, this where Arsene Wenger at first maybe was signing a lot of French players. Then he decided, look, we're going to have to start to develop homegrown. We're going to have to start to get players through the system here that's going to help us develop. So we will go and identify the best talent within England. That is the sense of what they did, or certainly within the English team's academies. And I always felt, and there's something that I said it a long time ago, and that was when I was playing against Arsenal. The Arsenal players' attitude, I always felt it was always one of, I don't know, they always had that slight arrogance about them. And that started to manifest in after a lot of players left the club, I think. I mean, a lot of those big players, you know, the players after the record-breaking team from 04, was that, I think it was, Owen. From then on, the players' attitude, I always felt, was wrong. It always was for me when I was playing against them. And I understand that sometimes, you know, you're coming through with a certain, I don't know, I mean, I say arrogance, but it's a certain maybe confidence about you, certainly at youth level when they're coming through. They're being identified by Arsenal, so you understand that. But I always felt that the attitude throughout that club was wrong. I always felt that. And that set in from the manager. The manager set that in because he wanted players to go out and express themselves and go and be themselves when they get onto the pitch. And I felt that then was creeping in towards the club. And there was no discipline. I felt as though that they were such an ill-disciplined side. And Pochettino now, what he's doing at Tottenham, as you say, he's identifying the best talent, yet he's instilling a discipline within that club. You can see throughout, and that is why they have kicked on. They're going on to a different level ahead of Arsenal.
Take on that point, Kev, will you, about Pochettino? Because, like, looking at it, he doesn't have an amazing record against the better teams in the Premier League. I think it's like one win in 16 against the like top clubs in the inverted commas. Does that indicate some sort of a, like, are Tottenham employing some sort of a different approach against the better teams that they're not against some of the other teams? Or, like, 1-16 is a bit more than a quirk, obviously. What's your take on that? Because, I mean, that does give Wenger some plausibility about his comment that they're not actually underdogs.
Well, they're always going to feel that they're not underdogs because they're at home. They're going to have to go and try and force the issue at some stage in the game. So it's a good point. I actually didn't know that. I didn't know that's that agent, to be honest. I didn't know.
Just doing a bit of research, Kev, you know what I mean?
Well, I know you're not bad. You're not bad. I've got to say that. Who did that feed? Was that one of the lads?
A team of people outside. Yeah, 10 people working overnight.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
You can use that one on the BBC over the weekend if you wanted.
All right, I will do. I will do. Thanks for that, Adrian. And honestly, yeah, I know you're there for me. I think I look at it. Say we taught me. You look at that Man United game the other week. It was such a tight game. Mourinho kind of shut up shop really. Didn't want to give anything away, and then they always seem to have too much. That seems to be United against Spurs anyway, for whatever reason that is. I don't know. I think with Tottenham, I think they look at that Real Madrid game. I think that was a game changer for them, that Real Madrid game a few weeks ago, because that was the one where it said to me, right, now, lads, this is now the time when we have to go now and start winning these big Premier League games. We've done it against the best in Europe. Now we've got to go and start doing it against the best teams in the Premier League because they're capable of doing it. The home record last season was outstanding. It's perhaps when they go away from White Hart Lane. That is the when from last season. Now we'll see how they got Wembley across the course of this year. But they've got to get it right when they're away from home, when they're in these big matches. And even if they're coming away with a draw and not necessarily getting beat, that's the one thing, I suppose, that they need to improve on. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that's the early game tomorrow. It's live on Premier League Live as well on todayfm.com. So do head along there and check it out. Liverpool-Southampton, Kev, is one of the other games we wanted to talk to you about. And Liverpool, as a good football man would say, have been in a good moment over the last while. I think it was three wins in a row for Liverpool. So I'm kind of interested to know whether you felt, I mean, the international break, I think it's fair enough to say, probably hasn't come at a great time for them, but actually, has the progress been made by Jurgen Klopp prior to that been deep enough to suggest that actually they're about to kick on here, or is there a bit more fragility about it?
Well, the game against Southampton, we won't get those answers. We'll get the answers against the better sides, of course we will. They're going brilliantly at home. They've got this great home record now. I think it's two defeats in the last 32. That's a bit of research for you there, Adrian, as well. But I just think I think they've got to sort that defensive issue and the goalkeeping issue, whatever it is. I know when we had Peter Schmeichel at the Roadshow a few weeks ago, he said that Samuel Mignolet is a perfectly adequate goalkeeper, excellent goalkeeper. He feels as though the pressure that he's been put under by having a strong number two puts the pressure on him when he plays. I don't necessarily see that. I don't agree with that. I think that every player, now whether or not it's a different mentality as a player, you've got to maybe have that pure belief in a manager, where the manager is actually saying to you, look, you are my number one and that is it. I don't know, but I you can't use that as an excuse that he's under pressure from a number two that he's not been producing. I've even before that any goalkeeper's gone in there at Liverpool, I don't think he's played well enough. Defensively, they're too open. They don't have any pace as well to play the way that they play in an open way. So what is wrong with them? You know, they look at the fullback situation. They've not got that right with Nathaniel Clyne. He's going to be out for another while now. Whether it's been Joe Gomez, whether it's been whoever's gone in at right back, they have struggled really for that consistency. And that's been the same at left back. So defensively, Liverpool do not look great. Going forward, they're as good as anyone in the Premier League. They're so good with Mane. It looks as though he'll be fit for this weekend. And then, of course, they've got all of the players that are coming in. Coutinho back in now, back in form. Whoever they've been playing up front, they're great. But defensively, no, they haven't improved, and they're not kicked on. And we won't find out tomorrow against Southampton. We're going to find out in a few weeks when they play against the better sides.
Do you not buy that Alberto Moreno has come on leaps and bounds this season? Oh, he's been doing the rounds in the press this week. Sid Lowe was sitting down with him, I think it was published in today's paper. And it seems that he's got a lot more confidence. His game has clearly come on, although it couldn't have got a lot worse than last season. And you've got James Milner whenever he's playing now, playing in midfield. They signed Robertson and he's not even getting his game. So he seems to be keeping players out of the team. And it seems to be the only bright spot in the Liverpool defence.
No, I don't take it. Moreno's come on leaps and bounds. No, I don't. I really don't. I don't take that at all. I only need to look at some of the games early on this season where he was absolutely woeful defensively. Alberto Moreno's game's about going forward. That's why he's in the team. That's why Jurgen Klopp plays him. He wants to get him in a side where he can bomb forward and create chances. Defensively is where he looks poor. Positionally, he's poor. He doesn't get his body shape right. But simply because, Owen, that's not been worked on. He's not working on the defensive side of his game. He's in a side to try and go and press high when they don't have the ball. Then when they do have it, he's got to be the one that's providing width for the team. So I don't have his improved defensively. No, I don't take that. I just think maybe he's getting a run of games and playing consistently. We're seeing the same Alberto Moreno that we probably saw under Brendan Rodgers.
You mentioned position. Sorry, just to butt in there, you mentioned positioning there. Like, how important is that problem for Liverpool now? It seems to be huge because, like, you go back to that hammering against Spurs, and of course, Dejan Lovren gets all the critics because he was the man in the middle and the ball kind of goes over his head in a perfect parabola on two occasions. But Joe Gomez is positionally all over the place for the first goal.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Moreno's. Like, I personally disagree with you on Moreno. I do think he's having a decent season. But you have mentioned positions, and I guess there's a point in that.
A decent season from an attacking point of view.
Yeah.
You only need to look at some of those early games this season and look at him getting caught out. And I could probably point out to four or five goals that have directly been involved that come from Alberto Moreno's defensive walls this season. So,
but it's more to do with
you can't be having that.
It's more to do with position problems rather than actual glaring mistakes. As I say, Moreno and Gomez potentially have contributed to what seem to be individual errors, but it actually goes deeper than that. Their positional awareness is quite poor. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you know, that's fair to say. And I think, and you know what? Oh, the message is coming from the manager that he wants them to play high. He wants them to be maybe a little bit more advanced. So they're not naturally going to be the stereotypical fullback back in position, tucked in 10 or 15 yards alongside the centre-half that's inside of you. I'd probably look at someone like Dejan Lovren as well, who doesn't necessarily communicate getting the message to Moreno that's on the outside of him. Get in here beside me. Tuck in 5 yards. Let's just see spells through in games. Liverpool don't seem to have the defensive ability to see spells through in matches when they're under pressure. I'll take it he's playing better. I'm not denying that, but he's playing better from an attacking point of view, Owen. I don't necessarily see his positional improvement in positional development improving. That's not what I see from Moreno.
Just some of the other games too whiz through, Kevin. I know you're. I think you're at United Newcastle tomorrow. We've Leicester City, yeah. 3 o'clock on Saturday. Leicester City v Man City. City just 2 points dropped in 11 games. Leicester in a bit of a better place, but maybe that means they just get beaten 3-1 rather than 5-0. West Brom Chelsea as well is one of the other interesting games. But Manchester United and Newcastle, the 5:30 game on Saturday. You're at that, I think, Kev. The break. Yeah. Maybe came at a good time for United. Conversely, we spoke about Liverpool, but maybe a good time for United. Carrick, Fellaini, possibly Pogba, talk about Zlatan all coming back. With those players back and given the position they're in now, are United suddenly going to be title contenders?
Well, I just think the way it's gone off the ball for them over the last few weeks, hasn't it? I think it's that cautious approach in those big games that's cost United. I think against Chelsea a few weeks ago for United, there was a real chance there for United, you felt, to go and test them. They hadn't been playing great. They lost the big Champions League game just before that, and you sense there was a real chance for United to go there and put them under serious pressure and maybe put Chelsea to bed. They didn't do that. That's always that cautious approach in those big games from Jose Mourinho. I don't see this again. This won't be a game where it's going to be, we're going to get an abundance of goals. Rafa Benitez tactically will set his side up really well tomorrow. He'll go there and make it difficult for United. I think United will win, probably a 1-0 or a 2-0 win for United. I don't see a host of goals in this one. I just think United in those big matches, excuse me, sorry, when it needs to be, certainly when you're going away from home, not necessarily Old Trafford, because United's record at Old Trafford has been sensational. It's when they get those big games away from home, and that's where they're losing those bigger ones, and that's where they've got to improve on, because I think when the side's there for the taking, Mourinho might need to go there and put aside under pressure and really go and get at them.
Just one last point, and it's on Leicester Manchester City. I'm not going to ask you who's going to win this game. Manchester City are probably going to win this game, but just on John Stones, like, he looked very, very good for England during the international break yet again, and so I don't think we're not going to disagree on this one, that he has definitely come on leaps and bounds this season. But
No, you're wrong.
I'm just interested in kind of this perception of ball-playing defenders, because quite often, particularly in English football, you've got a ball-playing defender and it's like, oh, look at this pretty boy, he's weak, he's just a footballer, he can't, you know, get gritty when it really matters in the Premier League. Whereas John Stones has defied all that. His gym programme is clearly paying dividends since he started that at the start of the year. And suddenly now we've got this kind of creation of a ball-playing defender who can defend really well.
If you look at John Stones at Everton, when he first broke into the side, when he first started to develop, John Stones was that type of defender where he would make these last-ditch challenges. He was incredibly brave. Since he's gone at City, I think he's probably had to learn. He's had to learn a totally different role. I mean, you only need to Guardiola last season when he said he loves John Stones for the reason that he's got balls. Anyone that plays in my defensive, or certainly if you're a central defender for me, has got to have balls, because you're going to get caught out of position. You're going to find yourself in positions that you don't necessarily think is natural to you as a centre half. That's what John Stones does. John Stones. He's very, very different in relation to a John Terry type figure. John Terry, even at his pomp, I feel couldn't play in Man City's back line. He couldn't step in and play for Man City and be that dominant centre-half. Just look how wide open they are. They leave themselves 1v1 defensively, leave themselves 2v2. So you have to take a chance. He's so good on the ball. That is the one thing that he brings to you. And that's where most of Man City's attacks start with John Stones. That is what he's in the team to do. Not necessarily being that defender first, he's an attack-minded player first. But from the defensive side, his natural side has come back to him this season. We're seeing him making last-ditch challenge. We're seeing him being able to dictate from a defensive point of view, because his natural game was always there. He had a great relationship with Phil Jagielka at Everton. I think he learned a lot from Jagielka on the general defensive side. But he's not going to be in positions, Owen, to when he's playing for City, to be that natural defender. He's got to play a different role.
A few comments in here, Kev, just before we wrap things up. Rory O'D on our Facebook page wants you to get a webcam, says he's getting motion sickness looking at you, which I can definitely understand some of that. And Lenny Clark wants to know, he figures that you're sitting there in your jocks having just thrown a shirt on from the bedroom floor.
That's okay too.
Are there genuine comments?
They are, yeah. Look up our Facebook page, Kev. I have no interest.
I'm actually sat here in shorts. I'm not in my jocks now. Yeah. I've just got a T-shirt on. I have to say, I've not been up too long.
No, you do look as if you've thrown yourself together.
No, my call time this morning was meant to be for about 8:40, 8:45. So I got called in a little bit early this morning, so I had to get myself ready.
Well, like a true professional, Kev, I'm sure you were up at sort of 6 o'clock preparing anyway. So, you know, that 5 minutes.
No, I had only been up yesterday, Adrian.
At least you're sober today, Kev. That's really the main thing.
I've never been anything but on there with you, Adrian. Come on,
Kevin Caban. Always a pleasure. We're going to speak to you over the weekend. Thanks a million.
You've been listening to a highlights podcast from OTBAM. If you want to watch us live, we're on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube every morning from 7:45 a.m.